This is a replay of the Wednesday night, July 17th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope to rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 3 hours to spend together tonight, and if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine, providing it has no consequence whatsoever, that is. We'll just have a good time while the rest of the world burns. All right. We avoid the issues that matter for 3 hours, which kind of gives you a respite. You might not have ever heard of the Merlympics. I kid you not, there is a Merlympics in Geneva, Switzerland. Merlympics, meaning mermaid, and yeah, right, not real, obviously. They've been holding this since 2015 to prove athleticism among competitors, mermaid and merman, since they're not sexist about this, competitors. Well, the winner, Mia Sims, is actually from Provo, Utah, and I'm not sure where she practiced, the Great Salt Lake, I don't know, but what I do know is she is the fastest mermaid in the world. She's been mermaiding for 10 years, and I'm thinking, how exactly does that work? Well, firstly, the athletes must compete in 5 categories, including ecology. That's right, diving to the bottom of whatever body of water it is and picking up the trash. Underwater, posing for photographs. Rescue, swimming to save a submerged dummy. All while wearing full mermaid or merman costumes. Sim says, it's not a skill that's easily learned. I guess this type of restriction on the body is very difficult for people to understand. She's now inducted into Team USA and hopes other Utah mermaids will aspire to such heights. So, yes, a contest of which you've never heard, I'm sure. Now, as for the city with the most fleas, where do you think it is? United States. So this is all United States cities. Just in your mind, think about the top 5 contenders. And I guarantee you that San Diego isn't probably on the list, but they, according to the San Diego Humane Society, are the city with the most fleas in the United States. And this is not bothering residents as much as their pets, obviously. And they're attributing it to their perfect climate. Yes, warm year-round. And apparently perfect climate for residents and fleas alike. And so the Humane Society is recommending pet owners talk to their veterinarians about treatments. Or you could move. So 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. And speaking of moving, Cindy declares her move is complete. I thought it was complete a while ago. What made it complete now?
There were about 15 boxes that had to wait for the garbage people to leave so we could put the 15 empty boxes, folded up.
Okay.
Or, like, collapsed in the bottom of the dumpster.
Oh, I see. Well, as far as I was concerned, your move was complete the minute the boxes got there. I wasn't even worried about you opening them. But now not only have you opened them, you've disposed of them. Very good.
It was just so much work to undo all the... And then finally I got the last box. And my cousin's like, you take the last, because he took all the boxes out, which was like a big pain. But then I took the last box. I put all the shoes on the shoe trees, and I have to get rid of some shoes. But then anyhow, and I guess it's all done. I don't have any songs. I don't know why. I just, nothing's been like, you know, exciting. I've been listening to the Rolling Stones on Facebook, like the early Rolling Stones.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. You don't like that, right?
Doesn't matter. If you have a request, I'll probably play it. There are very few that I veto entirely, but it does happen.
Oh, okay. Let's see. What would be good? Time is on my side.
All right. Well, of course, Irma Thomas did a better job with it, but we'll be happy to play the Rolling Stones doing it.
Okay.
All right.
And then what else?
It may be tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow night, by the way, because I've already loaded tonight's. But I will play it.
Tomorrow night is Thursday. That's
yes,
right.
Thursday. Tomorrow night is
anyhow.
Thursday, and I assume we will. I assume we'll be on live at 10, but we may be a little later than 10 if President Trump is long-winded. But assuming that his speech ends on time, we'll be on time. Otherwise, we'll follow it whenever he's done talking.
All right, and that's all I would say about it. You know I want to say more. I can't really
wrong place for it. Wrong place for it.
I can't even stand to listen.
Wrong place for it. All right, so... call somebody else about that. All right, Cindy, we'll get you your time on my side eventually. If not tonight, tomorrow night. Probably will be tomorrow night. All right, thanks.
Okay,
appreciate
bye-bye.
It. Maybe we'll play Irma Thomas, too. Wouldn't that be nice? All right, so, yes, eat your heart out, Mick Jagger. All right, so we've got... James on the south side with his 4 million stories that we didn't get to last night, but we will now. Hey, James, how's it going?
Oh, fine. How are you?
Well, I'm here.
Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Now, today you sent me a delightful story this afternoon about a guy in Florida just south of Daytona Beach who walked into Walgreens a little before closing and walked into the restroom and didn't emerge, and I guess they didn't notice. Now, why would somebody intentionally get stuck in a Walgreens? Well, now, ostensibly, you'd be saying, well, probably wants to steal something. Well, in this case, the guy went on a junk food binge. Man.
Yeah, that's okay. I guess we could say he is where he ate.
Well, right now, I think he's in jail. But I think the store closed about 10 or so, and he was on a binge until 3 a.m. when police showed up. And, of course, on top of everything else, of course they have surveillance cameras. I can't imagine. And in case you're wondering, I believe that he started with Tostitos spinach dip. And then moved directly to Reese's chocolate. He apparently, after Reese's, he sampled some Giardelli chocolate bars and a Dr. Pepper, of course. And why not smoke while you're at it? Some Newport cigarettes. Then the police said, well, they responded after an alarm went off. Okay, this is like 5 hours later. So here's what I want to know. How long did it take the alarm to go off and what set it off?
I'm thinking that he messed with the cigarette.
I think you're right. I would tend to agree that. Yep. So there's a picture of him too. What can I say? Indeed, a fine choice, no doubt. What was your favorite story?
Oh, there was okay. I keep thinking about that one last night that I got in, the one about the guy who had spent 6 years away. And just cash the checks and all that. That one really got me.
Well, what was amazing to me is how he got caught. And for people who don't know this story, it was your basic bureaucrat working for some government agency. And about 6 years ago, he determined that nobody noticed when he was there. So what if he just wasn't? And he was in Cadiz, by the way. He worked for the Municipal Water Board. And so it was that for 6 years, he didn't show up. And he didn't bother to do anything except cash his checks. And apparently, no one noticed this. They continued to pay him. And the deal was that after a while, 6 years after he left work without telling anybody, the deputy mayor who had hired him started look for him to so he could collect his long service medal. And they knew he was still there because he was on the payroll. And then the deputy mayor said, "Well, where is he? Is he still here? Has he retired? Has he died?" Well, they looked at, "Oh, he's on the payroll. He's cashing the checks." And the former manager of the water board told the deputy mayor, "Oh, I haven't seen him for years." And so that's when the deputy mayor decided that he'd call the guy up. And he asks the worker, "Well, what have you been doing? What did you do yesterday? What did you do the previous month?" Well, apparently he couldn't answer. See, if I was going to do this, I would at least be ready with answers. So they filed a legal case. He was this was 2010. He hadn't done a day's work since 2004. And it turns out all they fined him with was a year's salary.
Bureaucracy at work.
Yeah, exactly. So there it is, you know. I'm leaving work, yes, for 6 years, right? And the deal is that they didn't fire him because technically he'd retired in 2011.
there's one crazy one where this guy's date, okay, brought her friends, and they ordered all the most expensive stuff.
Yes, this was a wonderful story. And the guy realized somewhere during the meal that he was just a patsy because the blind date, you know, one of those, of course, dating apps, the blind date brings her girlfriend, and first he wanted to go out for a minimal meal. They wanted to go somewhere more expensive, but all right. So he realized halfway through the meal that they had ordered the most expensive things on the menu. I mean, just insane. And he realized what it was. So toward the end of the meal, he says, I'm going to go to the bathroom a moment. He left. And I think that's perfect. And so he got in his car, he went home. And I assume the women had to pay the bill.
Yeah, so they were kind of left. Left holding a bag.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you have it. What else did you particularly enjoy?
Oh, there was another rather serious one. I'm trying to find it because it was so odd that I said, "Now they gotta be kidding me."
While you're working, let's talk about Fifth Third Bank for a moment. Anybody in the Cincinnati area recognizes the name?
A company fires a second worker for not wearing a buzz cut.
I know about this one too. Yeah, this is an interesting thing because we're talking about this trucking company where they actually are training people. This individual was absolutely exemplary in his lessons and in learning, you know, how to drive. And anybody who thinks driving a big rig is easy, just try to back up. Or God forbid you're hauling liquid. I could go on and on. It's not necessarily easy. So here's a guy who's like their top performer, a 26-year-old guy in Des Moines. And he gets called to the office and he thinks that he's going to be given some kind of commendation. Basically, they say you have to have a buzz cut by Friday or you cannot continue employment with us. And this individual who is African-American, who wears his hair in locks, and he explained why he did that. And the company said, "Well, you won't be able to wear the hat." And he offered several alternative ways to wear his hair that would allow the hat to fit just perfectly. And they said, "Well, nope, you'll get a buzz cut or you don't work here." And, he tried to explain that, you know, being African-American, this was tied to his spirituality, his moral beliefs, and he hadn't cut his hair since his father had passed away years ago. And bottom line is the company put him on a bus, sent him home. Well, I'm glad to say he contacted a civil rights attorney. And what they, of course, discovered was that in 2021, they had done it to someone else. And so he's pursuing it. And, you know, this is one of the odd things, because on the one hand, you think that, well, an employer gets to call the shots. But on another hand, what where does that end? And, you know, I...
And it's kind of like, what does the bus cut have to do with the overall performance?
Right, of course. And, you know, I don't want to belabor that because we're going to start to get into something political. But the bottom line is he is going to fight it. And that will not only be for him, but other people who are dealing with that. Now, back to Fifth Third Bank. Like I say, if you're from the Cincinnati area, well, you certainly know Fifth Third Bank, and they've gotten a lot larger.
Oh, yeah, I know them, yeah.
Yeah, right, of course. So, $20 million fine. Why? Well, after hitting customers with illegal, worthless fees and then triggering asset seizures, they got a little trouble from the from their predatory loan practices and illegal repossession. And so apparently, you know, you've heard about these stories, but this bank harmed 35,000 customers, including about 1,000 who had cars repossessed. And so apparently the bank forced customers who already had car insurance to pay for additional insurance, imposing unnecessary fees, and then repossessing the cars when they became overwhelmed. And so the government stepped in, the CFPB, and found 37,000 instances where they charged fees that had no value at all. Certainly a lender, if they're loaning money on a car, wants you to have insurance, but the extra insurance was of no benefit to them. They were going to get their money if anything happened to the car. And so the CFPB said, no, you guys are going to hang for this. And they're hanging for $20 million.
Ouch.
Yeah. The other thing that they did, which they're not alone in this. We've heard about this a lot, opening fake accounts. And unfortunately, in some cases, the way some employees are bonused and rewarded is with, you know, opening of more accounts and all that. Well, in this case, the accounts, much like some of the other banks that we've talked about in the past, did not exist. They opened them in people's names, but the people had no idea they had the accounts.
Oh, that reminds me of one that I think we didn't get a chance to discuss. I sent it last week about a former, who basically was going to accounts. She would pick son of who were older, and of course had very significant assets. Would pilfer off to fund her extravagant lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, finally it caught up with her, but she had used, I think, about 5 or 6 accounts, if I remember the story correctly.
Well, it was a great story. And I'm about to hit the news, as usual. So we will do this again soon, and thank you for the wonderful stories.
You're welcome.
All right, talk to you soon.
Have a nice weekend.
Well, I'll be back tomorrow night, so there's more. But wait,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Talk to you then. Okay. All right, thanks. Bye. All right, and so on that note, we'll pay some bills and figure out what's going on in the world at large right here on WGN Radio.
A bad girl. I'm gonna make a mind if it takes all night.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
A bad girl. I'm gonna make a mind if it takes all night.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Good evening, sweet darling. May I ask your name? You seem to be lonely. Well, don't worry, I'm feeling the same. Oh, it's a groovy situation, a splendid combination, that we should meet at a time like this.
Oh, it's a grooving situation, a splendid combination. You're something that I just can't miss. That girl, I'm gonna make a mind if it takes all night.
Can you dig it, can you dig it, can you dig it, can you dig it?
That girl, I'm gonna make a mind if it takes all night.
Can you dig it, can you dig it, can you dig it?
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is one of my all-time favorite Gene Chandler records, Groovy Situation 1970 on Mercury. And I believe that that is the song that Fran was requesting last night. We'll find out. But before we do, we've got Dave in Chicago, who last night was going to talk about iPads, and then we ran out of time. So you called back, and I'm thrilled about that. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, Raleigh, how are you tonight?
All right, thanks for calling back.
Oh, thanks. Hey, you guys didn't run out of time. I just fell asleep, so that's on me.
All right. I figured you gave up on me, and I wouldn't have blamed you a bit.
Oh, no, I think I fell asleep. So anyhow, I just wanted to say, because I worked for Apple, actually, for 11 years in their retail. So if I could pass along my info to Jim and just get it to him, I'd be more than happy to help him. But I did want to mention, you had said last night that the iPhone and the iPad run an iOS system, which is close, but they actually developed a specific iPad OS, it operates mostly the same way, but now you can plug in hard drives and use some externals and things like that. Okay. So there is a little bit more usability. One of them that might be really helpful for Jim is the ability to screen share. So if somebody needs to help him remotely, they can do it by controlling his screen after he gives them permission. So anyway.
No, that's good. And, you know, I have a real, at this point, love-hate relationship with Apple. I've been with them since 79, maybe 78, bought that first Apple with, the rainbow color connectors. And then a year later, I got to have cassette drives. So I've been with them over the years. And I kind of liked OS 9, actually, and 8, too. But so what's happened since then has really caused me to have a fit. And that is, in the last several operating systems, they are leaving part of it inaccessible to me. And what I loved about Apple before was I could go in there and change what I wanted to my heart's content. That's no longer possible. And years ago, I claimed that that Microsoft was Windows was basically trying to be basically Apple with DOS. You know, pretty much they had to have some type of a GUI interface, which I wish they would have left alone at DOS. But anyway, now it's like reversed. It's what I hated about Microsoft was all those inaccessible parts of the OS, and now I got that with Apple, and it just drives me crazy.
Which ones do you miss the most? Like, what settings are you looking for?
Well, here's the thing. There was one little program that I carried. I probably carried this damn thing from OS 9, but it was that little program where it would immediately show me graphically how I was connected net-wise. So I could look at that and see if I had a problem where it was. And, you know, I know they have wireless, but I don't want wireless diagnostics. I want diagnostics. And, you know, theoretically, through a lot of work, I can do that. But this was the kind of thing where with, you know, one little mouse click,
Yes,
and I loved it. Yeah. And so what I'd always do was kind of amend the operating system to add my ancient program. Well, you can't do it anymore.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
Yes,
the only thing that comes to mind would be, like, you'd have to partition your hard drive and then run it completely, you know, and that's really a pain in the butt, too.
Well, right. You mean continue to run OS 9, or basically, something. I'd say 5 years, 4 years ago is when it happened, when it was just all over. And, I cried.
Yeah.
I cried and complained did nothing.
Apple.com/feedback, right? I had a friend of mine. He gave me one of the old Newtons. Do you remember the Newton?
Yes, absolutely.
It was like a palm. Yeah, really cool. It's a fun way to store passwords nowadays because it's nothing but a glorified notepad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's pretty cool. No. Hey, I had emailed you, too, about your book a while back, and I was just wondering, is there any other way that I can get my hands on a copy?
Yeah, for God's sakes, don't.
Jobs right,
right
now,
don't. No. I don't want anybody to pay the kind of money it is online. That's crazy. The problem is there aren't any copies, but I have promised, and it's on that to-do list, I will make it absolutely free, and I will put the whole thing online. I just have to find time to do it.
Amazing.
So, yeah, but people cool. Yeah, people will see that and they're like, $200, but $200, are you crazy? You know, it was $23.94 and included shipping. Nobody should pay a dime more than that. But, you know, it's just crazy time. But I will, in fact, part of the reason that I want to make it for free, because I'm not going to do another print of it. You know, I ran about 500 copies and figured that's it. And, you know, when I saw what people were allegedly charging, and to the best of my knowledge, no one has paid it. God, I hope not. I thought, well, I'll stop this. I'll just make it free. So I will do that. But like I say, it's on that infamous to-do list. Don't lose sleep waiting for it.
Terrific. Hey, thanks for your time right. tonight, Raleigh.
Thanks
really
for calling back. Yeah, hope to talk to you soon. Thanks, Dave.
Okay, bye now.
All right, so 888-876-5593. If you don't remember Newtons, they were, you know, a PDA and in the early days, and I know they had Message Pad 2100, which I think is probably now, what was that, late 90s, around there. And it was neat, but I think one of the things that hurt it was not cheap. And so, yeah, it was innovative, to say the least, but I think that price was just tough. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And that will bring us, as soon as I can figure out where my magic twanger is, here we go, to Fran in Austin. Welcome back to WGN Radio, Fran.
Hey, Raleigh, thanks for playing my request, even though I got the title wrong.
Well, Carol knew instantly, and yeah, it was kind of.
I knew she would, or yep, you would,
right,
or somebody. I thought,
right.
What is the title of that? Yeah. I'm not sure, but yeah. I didn't.
Groovy
anyway.
Groovy situation, and it is such a great song.
Yeah, it is. But I'm losing what's left of my mind, so I didn't get the time. And then, I really do worry about that sometimes, because tonight when I called in, I wanted to talk about Connie Francis and Bobby Darin.
Okay.
And so John answers the phone, and I said, yeah, I want to talk about Bobby Darin, and I had to ask Gary, who could not think of Connie Francis?
Yeah, it happened.
And John says, are you sure you want to do this? I said, I'm okay. It was just a temporary blip.
That's hilarious. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's like, I'm so embarrassed. But then I thought, well, you know, it happens.
Yeah.
But anyway, I read her autobiography, Who's Sorry Now?
Oh, well, that perfect title. Well, she probably told you in the autobiography she hated that song at first.
She did.
Yeah.
She did. But a lot of the stuff with her father.
Yes.
Makes Mommy Dearest look like a saint.
Well, yeah, George. Good old George. Well, I love the fact that he knew she had musical talent, so he enrolled her in accordion school.
Yeah, right. That kind of gives you a precursor for how her life's
going
to be.
And then, of course, showed her off at all of the, you know, the church socials or whatever other neighborhood festivities. You know, here's my accordion playing daughter. Yeah.
Right. And he didn't want her to do, you know, rock songs or anything like that. He wanted her to keep doing these Italian torch songs kind of things. He wanted and had, well, she had a little fight to her. I kind of liked her for that.
Yeah.
But he was, I mean, you talk about control freak. This guy wanted control of everything in her life.
Oh, absolutely, which is, you know, that explains why he hated Bobby Darin. And the reason she probably talked about this in the autobiography, but the reason that she met him was they were looking for someone to pair her with to, you know, because he wrote and she wrote. And they thought, well, this would be somebody who would be a good idea. You know, maybe they could, you know, work together. And initially, that's all it was. They were flirting, but nothing more. But that's when George, you know, sees, oh, my God, she's smitten with him. Well, we can't have that. And so,
well, and then he also got her to be, you know, when she was with him, she was a little more rebellious.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And there was
he wasn't going to have any of that.
Well, I think the real powder keg on that was that there was that rumor that she and Darren were going to elope. And he got wind of that and just snapped. And, you know, at that point, you know, he was like chasing Darren out of buildings and stuff. You know, it wasn't good. But the bottom line is that it wasn't only that he was trying to dissuade Darren, but she realized at that point she was not going to beat her father. And so, you know, she basically said, you know, no, nothing's going to happen with this. And then, of course, she hears about that he's going to get married to Sandra Dee, or that he had gotten married. And she went into depression. Oh, hell. It was not pretty.
I've also heard that the romance was a lot more on her side than his.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. Well, firstly, it wasn't a romance at that point, and it hadn't been consummated. This was had not gotten to that stage. This was more like aggressive flirting, but she was convinced that this was her one true love. I don't think that he ever got it to play out because, of course, George wasn't even going to let them really date. But what happened was, you know, Sandra Dee had her problems. And I think she had a gambling addiction. I don't remember what it was. Maybe it was something else. But whatever it was, she had an addiction to something. And she was, like, in some kind of rehab. And at that point, Bobby Darin and Connie had reconnected. And he had called her and said, you know, I'd love to see you. So what was horrible about this was the timing, because he invited her to his hotel room. And when he gets there, he is nude with two women. And oh, man. And and I, you know, here's the line. It said she said, but I'll never know if she really did. If she did, she's got, you know, more about her than certainly I wouldn't have come up with it. So glad to see your mojo is still working. Very, very nice. And she left. But from what I understand, he was like, bad friggin' time, and somebody's a setup, and when I find out who it is, they're going to die. And, you know, so, I mean, this is in the hotel, right? And so you can imagine. I mean, Shakespeare has nothing on these two. And you know, that's as close as they got to reuniting. And like I say, they didn't really ever have anything to reunite with, you know.
Right.
So that was the deal there. And they did some work together on, like, TV shows or whatever. And at one point, she realized that this is not going to work. You know, if she can't keep holding this torch, it's going nowhere. So that's when she sort of looked for other songs, you know, threw herself into that. And Sedaka Greenfield, you know, Neil Sedaka and Howie, were writing for her. And much like you said about her father, they were writing these soppy ballads that he would have wanted. And she, you talk about getting a backbone, turned them down. She said, this is not right. So they had written a song that they didn't really want to give her because they thought she'd be insulted by it. But they had nothing to lose, since basically she hated everything they gave them. So they gave her Stupid Cupid, and she said, you've just written my first hit. My second hit, you know. This. And so, sure enough, it broke and did well. And then, of course, from there, you know, she got a little acting role in Where the Boys Are. They want to use the soundtrack and all that. And so she agreed, if she got some screen time. I don't know how much her dad was or wasn't involved in that. And so it went from there. But, yeah.
Yeah, he was quite... The thing that got me was at the end of the book, because, you know, she got raped.
Oh, much later. You know, she got married right after Where the Boys Are or whatever.
She got married.
To Dick. Yeah, I don't know if she talked about Dick or whatever, but that wasn't long. He was like a PR agent or something, but anyway.
She did a little bit. He was a jerk, but her father liked him.
Well, there you go. And then... Izzy was the next guy. He was like a beautician, actually, and he fell for her. And I think that was also a relatively short thing. And they were married, and that didn't last either. So I think less than a year. And so then there was a third marriage. The restaurant guy, Garzilli, I think was his name. Anyway.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've read that.
Right. But it was after Garzilli, it was when she got to the Howard Johnsons, which I think is where you're going, in 74.
Yeah, and what I was really upset about was here this poor woman gets raped.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, she's talking to her father. And her father says to her, well, at least you married a man who will forgive you.
Oh, my. Yeah, well.
And I thought, she was raped, you idiot.
Yeah.
What kind of father would condone that kind of thing and just say, well, at least you have a man who will forgive you?
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. It makes sense, though. But I had heard that he referred to her as damaged goods because of it.
Yes, he did.
Okay, that was the part that I had had heard. And so, you know, unfortunately, that marriage did not work, to say the least. And oh, what, you know, at some, and then she lost her voice, you know about that. And then for a while she was committed. I think Dick Clark actually had her committed.
Wow, that would be an interesting story.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I don't think he did it with anything but the best of intents, seriously, you know, because she was pretty much, you know, off the rails, so to speak, and very depressed and all that kind of stuff. So I think he only did it with one, maybe the only thing he ever did with goodness in his heart, but I never heard anything to the contrary. Yeah.
Well, from everything I've heard about him. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But I never, you know, and I could be wrong, because I certainly wasn't there for any of that, but I never heard that he did it for any evil intent.
No, I mean, yeah, who wouldn't be falling apart after a life?
Well,
like
of course, of course. And who wouldn't need help, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, and there were so many other stories. That's just part of it. Yeah, I'll bet you that autobiography is good. I'll have to get that. I never read it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You know, it was one of those that I, you know, just kept reading.
Yeah, yeah, no, it would have to be spellbinding, because there's so much more, and there's a Frank Sinatra part of it and all that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if anybody's interested in finding out a little bit more about that situation, I'd highly recommend that book.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I'm glad you did, and you've just recommended it to me. I'm going to go to Amazon and get myself a copy.
All right.
All right. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Raleigh.
All right. So time for me to talk about something I love, which, of course, is radio and listening to it. And, of course, that brings me to the Sea Crane Company and the CC Skywave Radio 2. It's got AM. It's got FM. And like all the radios that Bob Crane has been involved in designing, it has phenomenal reception on both AM and FM. It's also got all the shortwave bands, NOAA weather and alert, and the VHF aviation band, which is really nice, especially if you're a traveler. And this is the CC Skywave 2 new, and the new shortwave antenna jack will noticeably improve shortwave reception when used with an external antenna, so it's easy peasy and nice. You get the high quality earbuds, the CC buds included. You get a carrying case and a hand lanyard, and it's got a rotary volume dial, but everything else is digital. And memory presets, 400 of them. Yeah, a little fold-out backstand, and you can tune, like on AM, in 9 or 10 kilohertz, which, if you're traveling, makes all the difference in the world, because we, in the North American area, use 10 kilohertz, so, you know, like 720, 730, 740. But in most of the world, they use 9 kilohertz spacing, so it's 540, 549, 558, and so on. And so you, with the flip of a switch, can go to 9 kilohertz tuning or 10 kilohertz tuning, so no matter where you are, it's going to work. Couple A, double A batteries, not included, but you'll be able to listen for 70 hours. And if you want, you can get the optional AC adapter with the micro USB tip. And it's also has a simple timed battery charger if you've got rechargeables as well. So whole thing weighs 6 ounces. It is small and it is just dynamite. But if you want to know what's going on, like I say, terrific AM and FM reception, but all those shortwave bands, 400 presets, something tells me you'll fill them. You can check it out at ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com, or you can give them a call, 800 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. They've got the world's best customer service. They'll send you a hard copy of the catalog if you want one, and you will find out more. But if you can go to ccradio.com, read all about that CC Skywave 2. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
Please wait for me. Shall return my love for you will forever though we must part.
Raleigh James, and if you're saying doesn't sound like the Flamingos, well, it is, and it's Sha Na Na, and that's from their first album, On Buddha, 1969. And of course, Lovers Never Say Goodbye. Jim in Richmond wanted to hear him some Sha Na Na, and now he has. And we've got 2 more hours of talk, and I hope you'll join us right here on WGN Radio.
How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in a boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just a beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. I've sunshine enough to spread. It's just like the fella said. Tell me quick, ain't love a kick in the head? Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in a boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Dean Martin, yes, at the end of his Capitol Records career. Nelson Riddle, of course, conducted the orchestra for that, and Sammy Kahn wrote that. It didn't chart at all, but what happened was it was in Ocean's 11. And so, although it was an alternate version, actually, not the single version you just heard, but nonetheless, that's really what put it on the map, because there was no chart action before or after. And of course, shortly thereafter, he went to reprise Frank Sinatra's label, who was no fan of Capitol for a lot of reasons. All right, so 888-876-5593. Johnny D in Ohio requested that. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh. Did you just say that I requested that?
Yeah, you wrote me an email that said you wanted to hear Ain't That a Kick in the Head.
I thought you deleted that.
No, this was yesterday at 9:18 p.m.
No, it wasn't. It was like later than that in my time.
No, not my time. My time. I got it while I was on the air. Yep.
Yeah, I think I said I wanted, I was listening to him. And I was listening to Ain't That a Kick in the Head, you know?
Yeah.
And then what else was in that I requested?
Nothing. You had another email that had some I Love It thing, but I don't know where that is. Anyway, but that was the only one in this. Anyway, so that's the deal. You got your Dean Martin. What's up?
Well, I'll tell you what's up. I missed the first half hour of your show because I had to hear my man JD tell us what it is and what it's going to be.
All right. Well, and tomorrow night, Donald Trump will be doing that. And if he continues to wax sentimental after 10 p.m., WGN will carry him, and then I'll be on right after.
Oh. Well, I guess WGN is, you know, doing things.
That's news. They absolutely should. And, you know, we won't talk about it, but they absolutely should.
Okay. No, we won't talk about it. I was going to bring up something political, but political. It was in that, how does Root say it? In that avenue of approach.
Well, let's put it this way. If it'll make anybody uncomfortable, let's not do it. If it's otherwise fun.
No, it won't make anybody uncomfortable. It's a song request.
Oh, a song request. Well, that might make a lot of people uncomfortable.
And it's got to do with what I've seen earlier today on the Fox News station, that Becky. Oh, yeah, the lovely and talented Becky, man. She had a rough day.
Why?
Well, because she had to go get
Was the cable out?
What?
I said, was the cable out? No.
No, as soon as she got on, she put it on because I don't think I had it on. Let me see. Wait. Hey, Beck. Mute that. Mute it. Now, listen. I want you to tell Raleigh about your test today. Hang on, Raleigh. She had to have a heart test. Wait.
Oh, like a stress echo or something?
Hi, Raleigh.
How are you feeling? How are you feeling?
I felt fine. Everything was good. No blockage.
Good.
Clear, crystal clear.
So
it was a stress test today, and I was there for 4 hours, and they make you do different things.
Yeah.
My legs hurt from... going on the treadmill, right?
Treadmill portion, sure. But your heart. So they did a little shot some dye in you and took a look at how your heart was doing and all that.
Right.
And it's fine. It's great news.
Yeah.
All right.
Right, because I had 100% blockage before.
Ooh.
8 years ago, I was 100% blocked in the one and. I went and got rechecked, and everything's good.
That's wonderful.
Not blocked, and yeah.
Now
so.
let me ask you, how did you cure that blockage?
Oh, they put a stent in.
Okay, perfect. And see,
yeah.
8 years later, you're better than new.
Yeah, everything's good. No, there's I'm all opened up, and so
more to me.
Yeah, she knows that, John. Did you hear him?
No,
she does more than me.
Well, I'm just glad you're doing well and you're sounding good and you survived it. And the worst part was having to get up and go do it.
Yeah. And then coming back home to John and saying, "What did you do today, John?" Nothing.
But he's good at it. I mean,
he's excellent at doing nothing.
Yeah. I mean, that's something to be coveted. I think we all should be able to spend some time doing nothing.
Yeah, I tell you. Okay.
All right.
Bye, Raleigh.
Bye.
Thanks.
All right. So, the lovely and talented Becky. All right.
Yeah.
So, she sounds great.
Yeah, hey, Raleigh.
Yeah.
You know, Jerry, I know you don't watch movies, but Paul Newman in that movie, Cool Hand Luke.
If you say so. I've heard of it.
Yeah, well, he said sometimes nothing could be a real cool hand.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
That's what he said.
Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes nothing could be a real cool hand.
I recommend doing nothing. Yes.
Oh, man, I'm an expert at nothing, man.
Yeah, me too.
But I worked all my life.
That's right.
So I retired.
That's
so
right.
I could do nothing.
And you are.
You know?
That's right.
I can do what I want to do when I want to do it. Like last night, I watched the whole history of humanity.
All right. Well, no wonder. Yeah. No wonder you know so much about hominins.
You're doing right. I mean, I don't waste my time reading a book about Connie Francis. Well, I mean, I don't know. I knew who she was. But I was wondering this. What's his name, Bobby Darin? Was he Sicilian?
Well, he was Italian. I don't know if he was Sicilian.
Because he was Sicilian. A lot of Italian fathers don't want their daughters messing around with them Sicilians.
His last name was Cassotto, Cassotto.
Yeah, it could have been.
I guarantee you, Connie's father wouldn't have cared what he was. He was a distraction, and he wasn't having it.
She was a pretty girl, Connie Francis,
yeah,
wasn't she?
Yeah, nice figure, absolutely.
Who raped her? She got raped?
Oh, in 1974 at the Howard Johnson's on Long Island. It was not pretty.
Did they get the person?
I think they did.
Okay.
But it was not pretty, and she really had some emotional problems after that, as you would expect. But the problem is, as I say, and as Fran was commenting, her father basically blamed it on her. Said, well, now you're damaged goods. And she sued the...
I heard that.
And she won.
That.
She got about $2.5 million.
$2.5 million?
I think so.
Wow.
And see, she had a whole spate of problems. Her brother had, that was a horrible, horrible thing. He was murdered 7 years later, gunned down by the mob in front of his house.
Those son of a guns.
Yeah, this was...
Well, anyhow, they never normally hurt anybody that was outside of the, you know.
Right, they don't
they
make...
They didn't hurt the family.
Yeah, they don't make mistakes, I understand.
All right. But anyhow, I don't know nothing about it. But what, you know, getting back to the song request, what you just said, you know, after what she's been through, I heard you say, you know how I say sometimes I listen and then somebody says something and it brings to mind a song?
Uh-huh.
You know how I said that?
Yep.
And you said, yeah, after what she's been through, who wouldn't need help?
Right.
That's what you said.
Yep.
Right? And it brought to mind another James Brown song, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, I need help. I can't do it alone. How can I do it if I'm doing it wrong? Is it I need help?
Yep, absolutely. But actually, I'm going to play some James Brown tonight, and not I Need Help, though it was a fine record recorded in 1969 at Criteria. But what I'm going to do, a lot of people don't know that I Got You, I Feel Good, the hit record was not what was in the movie Ski Party, nor was it the first release. The first release came out on Mercury, on Smash, actually, and boy, Sid Nathan just hit the ceiling. So I'll tell that story.
Okay. Yeah. But anyhow, I wanted also, and I'm going to go now after this, I felt vindicated. Vindicated last week when I heard Linda.
Yes.
Say that I did pretty good.
Yes.
Okay?
That's right.
I felt vindicated, and the reason I thought of that word, because back home in Youngstown, the town paper was called The Vindicator.
I'm not surprised.
It was called The Vindicator, and I felt vindicated. I thought of that word. So
right.
I felt vindicated
all
when
right.
Linda said that.
Well, there you
and
are.
I wasn't hurt. I don't know what you're talking about. I was infuriated.
All right. Okay. All right. Pick the emotion of your choice. Bye-bye. Okay, bye. Yes, sir. The Vindicator. I didn't know that. I like that, though. It fits. Man, Youngstown, I'll tell you what. All right. So 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, I'm going to get a request from Dave and LaSalle. We'll talk to Brian and Joliet. He's got a request. And, yeah, I will tell you the James Brown story, because if you're unaware of this, in the middle of his contract with King, he recorded 9 albums for Smash. I'll explain it coming up on WGN Radio.
Oh, I feel good. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good. So good. I got it. Oh, I feel nice. Sugar and spice. I feel nice. Like sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. Since I got you. When I hold you in my arms, I know I can't do no wrong now. When I hold you in my arms, my love can't do me no harm. And I feel nice. Feel nice, sugar and spice. So nice, so nice that I got you.
WGN. Independent Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, that's the first one, recorded in 1964 for Smash. Like I say, James Brown and Sid Nathan were having quite the fight. Now, of course, Sid ultimately sued and won, and I'll explain what the whole setup was. But when he did, he took James Brown back to Criteria, where James had been recording quite a bit at that point in North Miami, and re-recorded I Got You. And that's the one you've heard.
I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good. So good.
And in fact, when Sid Nathan and King released Ski Party, the soundtrack supposedly from the movie, it was that version that appeared on that album. But as I say, if you look at the movie, James Brown is lip-syncing the Smash record. And what it was, as early as 1961, it was just loggerheads between James Brown and Sid Nathan. And Sid was adamant that James shouldn't release a live album, and that's what James wanted to do. And in fact, Henry Stone at Tone in Hialeah was involved in this as well, kind of trying to be somewhat of an intermediary. And ultimately, Sid Nathan said, well, it's going to bomb, but hey, if you use your own money, you can just record something live. Well, that was the 1962 album Live at the Apollo, which did anything but bomb. That was very successful, and to this day stands as a great effort. Now, you'd think that, oh, well, they'll mend fences and all that. No, it continued to be contentious. So contentious that within a year, by the end of 62, James Brown has recorded nothing new for King. He won't do it. And so, meanwhile, Sid Nathan is, you know, pulling out old cuts to release and stuff like that. Well, at one point before 64, late 63, this has been going on now about a year. It's late 63, and James Brown reads his contract and decides, unilaterally, decides that, well, my contract covers me singing, but there isn't anything about the JBs, my band, doing instrumentals. So he makes a deal with Smash, and we're the James Brown Orchestra, don't you know? And so the first single was Baby, 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 that actually had Bobby Bird, the leader of the Famous Flames, you know, with Anna King, another member of his touring band. And that did all right. Number 15 on the R&B charts. It barely charted pop. But Sid Nathan probably said, well, there are vocals. It's a contract violation, but I'm not going to press it. There's not really a hit and all that. Next was an instrumental. James Brown was at the organ doing Caledonia, and that barely made the R&B charts. And so stiffed completely on the pop charts. Again, Sid Nathan's probably looking at this saying, yeah, maybe it's a violation, but I'm not doing anything. So there are more Bobby Bird and Anna King solos, another instrumental by James Brown, and nothing's happening. All right. Then, like a kid who just has to push the envelope to see what he can get away with, James Brown releases a vocal, Out of Sight. And that was on Smash, credited to James Brown and his orchestra. Well, that was a top five R&B record, and Sid Nathan went crazy. He actually went to the lawyers because he said James Brown is openly defying the contract. So he sued. He wins an injunction against Smash releasing vocal records by James Brown. Now, Smash released an album, and that's where the I Got You, I Feel Good first appeared. And so Sid is going back for an injunction. And ultimately, Smash was forced to withdraw the album entirely. And Brown went back to King, where he had and some of the strongest singles of his career, arguably, like Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, are all on King. But Smash was able to retain the masters that they recorded and release them. And eventually, Out of Sight, the album, was reissued in 1968 on Smash. So that's the story. But if you watch Ski Party and you're saying, that doesn't sound like the hit song, it's because it's not. It was the Smash version. All right. So on that note, we will get to Dave and LaSalle, Brian and Juliet, and you two, Joliet, and you two coming up on WGN Radio.
The moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. Walk home in my hair now, and wondering what dress to wear now. I say a little prayer for you. chunk of us, dear. I say a little prayer for you. At work, I just take time, and all through my coffee break time, I say a little prayer for you. Forever, forever, you stay in my heart, and I will love you forever and ever. We never will part. Oh, how I'll love you together, together. That's how it must be to live without you. Would only mean heartbreak for me.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that is Dionne Warwick, 1967 on Scepter, and that was another one of Linda and Richton Park's requests. So there. We're going to do Wait a Minute next, but oh man, when Cleveland Dennis requested that last night by Tim Tam and the Turnons, I thought to myself, I can think of four other records with that title, so we'll play them all. All right, Dave and LaSalle, welcome to WGN Radio. Dave, are you still with us? There you are.
For tonight.
What's happening?
The first one is Don't Take Your Love From Me, and I'd Like It by Gloria Lynn.
Okay.
Yeah, and the other one is an old instrumental that I got a lot of play. Canadian Sunset with Eddie Haywood and Hugo Winterfall.
Okay. All right.
And I'll be getting off the line. I enjoy your show as always, and you take care of yourself.
All right. You'll hear it tomorrow night. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
All right, so 888-876-5593. If it's on your mind, I'll make sure it's on mine. Brian and Joliet, welcome back to WGN Radio. Are you with us, Brian? Well, Brian hung up. All right, well, so I guess he doesn't get to hear his request. Although, we'll also be back to Bobby Darin on some things as well, because that'll come into the Wait a Minute Quartic. I guess it's a quartic. I think there are 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, there's four. So, yeah, that would be it. And, yeah, full show tomorrow night, except we may be delayed a couple of moments, or longer, depending. However long Donald Trump wants to speak, I hope he will speak. And at the end of that, we will speak about anything of no consequence. In other words, absolutely nothing that he says either way. All right, so this will be your political free zone, since every place else you turn, you can hear it nonstop. Every possible nuance is being covered by somebody at this moment. So we'll talk about Mercury retrograde again. All right. So, because someone said, you explained it and it doesn't make sense. This is the last time I'm explaining this. All right. Here's the deal. Every planet except the moon, pretty much, will go into apparent retrograde motion. And what this means is if you're lying on your back on a hammock looking at the heavens, there are times when it appears that planets are moving backwards. Now, they're not, of course. They don't station and back up. But it certainly looks that way on Earth. And as I say, everything, you know, but the moon and the sun, obviously, will do this. And the meanings, astrologers give various meanings to what happens when a planet is retrograde. And there's disagreement. Some feel that it will be more potent. Others feel that it'll be less potent. And the bottom line, though, is that when it comes to Mercury, there's all sorts of thoughts about this to the point that it's almost mythical. People will say, oh, it's a Mercury retrograde. That's why everything's screwed up. All right. Now, what that comes from is Mercury as a planet rules communication and travel, as far as that goes, and some other things too, but let's just stick with that. And therefore, when Mercury is in retrograde, things can get screwed up. And as I say, it's not the time the airline's going to crash, it's the time they may lose your luggage. It's not the time that you will lose a lawsuit, but it might be the time that when you're filing papers, there's a snafu in some of them. Yeah, it's that kind of stuff. So it's a minor annoyance, but there is one very positive thing to Mercury retrograde, if you believe any of this, by the way, and that is that if you are revisiting something that is already done, Mercury retrograde is a perfect time to do that. So let's say you were revising a divorce agreement or something like that. Mercury retrograde is perfect in that situation. But for the most part, people say, oh gosh, Mercury retrograde is coming. I don't want to have to sign any contracts. I don't want to have to travel anywhere, whatever. All right. Now, the way it works, as I say, the planet suddenly looks like it stopped dead and is moving backwards. Again, it's an apparent motion. What's important to the story, and very few astrologers really go over this, is that there is a shadow period of the retrograde. For instance, coming up on August 4th, Mercury is going to suddenly stop dead and start reversing itself. So it's going to go into retrograde, apparent retrograde motion. And when it does, it'll be just before midnight Central Time on August 4th. And at that time, Mercury will be 4 degrees in Virgo. So now, it's going to be retrograde until August 28th. So, backwards it goes. It moves back from 4 degrees in Virgo, back to 1 degree in Virgo, 0 degree in Virgo, 29 degrees in Leo, 25 degrees in Leo. And then we get to August 28th, and suddenly at 4:14 p.m. Central Time, Mercury stops dead again. It stations, and it's about to turn direct. Where is it? At that point, it's gone all the way back to 21 degrees in Leo. So the real period of Mercury retrograde would be from August 4th, when it's 4 degrees in Virgo, back to August 28th, when it's 21 degrees in Leo. But nothing is ever so simple in astrology, and therefore, there is a shadow period, which means the effects of Mercury retrograde will first be felt when Mercury moves to the position it will assume when it stations to go forward again. So that would be 21 degrees in Leo, and that happens July 16th. So that was yesterday. In fact, I looked it up to make sure when would it happen in Chicago. 10:52 p.m. last night, Mercury was 21 degrees in Leo. And it will continue from this point merrily until August 4th at 4 degrees in Virgo, when it starts to move backwards. So the shadow starts at 21 degrees in Leo on July 16th yesterday. Now, Mercury goes direct, 21 degrees in Leo, on August 28th, and we're in another shadow until we get back to the furthest point Mercury had advanced before it went retrograde, which is 4 degrees in Virgo. So it will again be 4 degrees in Virgo moving forward on September 11th. So the entire retrograde period, including the shadow, would be July 16th through September 11th. But wait, there's more. Isn't there always? And what more is, you got to know that Mercury is also Kazemi on August 18th, and you're saying you've thrown another word into the equation. What is Kazemi? Kazemi actually is a concept when Mercury conjoins the Sun. It's Kazemi, and supposedly at that moment, that's the ultimate. It's the heightened awareness, the ultimate point, and Mercury is Kazemi on August 18th at 8:58 p.m. Central. All right. I hope I've explained that. I'm not going to do it again. That's right. Because apparently, if you still don't get it and you want to, you need somebody better than me to explain it, because that's the best I can do. But I tried. Now, I'm always interested in this stuff. And like I've mentioned before, I know an awful lot about Western astrology and almost nothing about Vedic astrology, which is really my loss. Because Vedic astrology, as far as I'm concerned, is probably the best in terms of anything predictive or things of that nature. But it is so complicated. And anybody who thinks that they can learn Vedic astrology quickly in their spare time is kidding themselves. But, I always think that I know everything about something. There can't be anything else that that I need to know. And then I find out that in addition to Vedic astrology, there's Nadi astrology. Now, this is a new one to me, but I was looking it up, and this is so crazy. There are people who swear by this, and what it is, your thumb impression, male if you're right thumb, female if you're left thumb if you're female, your thumb impression will be able to be matched with a leaf. I'm not kidding you. A leaf that is ancient, as far as that goes. And this leaf will foretell your past and your future and everything else. Now, it's a whole big story about how they find the leaves and all this. And most people would say, you're out of your mind. But there are people who absolutely believe in it. And I was looking at one of them online, one of my nuts. I mentioned this before. When I can't sleep at night, I'll look for things on YouTube that are not so boring that my mind wanders, but not so interesting that I'm compelled to stay awake. And one of them was this, I guess, psychic and astrologer who believed all this naughty. And he swears, absolutely swears, that many people have had these leaves discovered and read, and it tells you what your name is and what your parents' names are and their grandparents and everything else about you. There's no shortage of people who want to take your thumbprint online and charge you a fortune to do this, by the way. So I'll leave it to you. But that's the latest. Naughty astrology. And I've seen it as NAADI, and I've seen it as NADI. But I'm not even going to think about this. If I thought Vedic astrology was hard, this is insanity. But there you have it. All right, so enough of that. 888-876-5593. Johnny is a first-time caller, and he's in Cicero. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Miss James, I have to thank you because you gave me the incentive to call you tonight when you brought up planetary astrology or whatever you call it. I have to thank you for last night when you interceded with Patsy Cline, and we both know that she can stop planet Earth from rotating. You know that.
All right.
Because you, I've said it before that you're the best, and you should be the president of the United States.
No, God, no, absolutely not.
you have a way about you of making people shut their mouth, and I know you know how.
Yeah, I think I'll sit this one out. But yeah, so Patsy Cline, what would you like to hear?
I would like to hear her when she's saying. I have these pieces, the little pieces.
I fall to pieces. I fall to pieces.
No, not I fall to pieces. Okay. This was the song you made. In the song, the lyric, she says, I'm looking at these pieces, but she's got you.
Oh, yeah, I played that last night.
Yeah, that was last night, yeah. Miss James, and yeah. You really stopped the world, yeah. Miss James, and I had to call you now because yeah. you brought up astrology.
Okay.
Well, I had to call you and give you a little feedback about Patsy Cline because she can stop the world when she sings. When you put that song on, you stop the rotation of planet Earth for a little while.
Yeah.
While she was singing, because only Patsy Cline can do that.
Yeah, well, she did a hell of a job with She's Got You, that's for sure, on Decca. Huge, huge hit for her in 62. And sadly, close to one of her latest hits. So before she, of course, died. And a lot of things were released posthumously on her as well. And that's an interesting list. But when I look at the greatest hits, the one thing that I rarely see on our greatest hit stuff is Walking After Midnight. And I thought that was a great song.
It sure was. I have a memory or two about that one. Let me see.
Yeah, that was in 57. It was a flip side.
I'm not a good follower of all music, but... Patsy Cline was absolutely the angel of all the girls, I would think. Nobody could sound like that.
Yeah, she was terrific, and it was such a loss and so shocking. I remember in March of 63 when she died. Just shocking.
Well, I could tell you about that loss. Now, I got something that my dad would say, and he was a veteran in the South Pacific in World War II, and he would say, if you're going to fly on an airplane, good luck, he would say, words to the effect that flying was strictly for the birds.
Oh, God. Well, inclement weather certainly didn't help that one. Yeah.
Miss James, that was Cowboy Copas and
yes,
Hawk Joe Hall.
That's correct. That's absolutely right. And That was they had performed just earlier that evening. I think George Jones was on that bill, along with Billy Walker and Dottie West and a number of people. That was a very big bill, and that was a benefit for in Kansas City, Kansas, actually. And yes, Cactus Jack, Jack Call, was part of his family. He had died in an automobile crash, and they were doing a benefit for him, and all these acts were on it. And she did three shows that day, standing room only. And then, sadly, of course, it wasn't. It was not a good flight. They were thinking about driving, which is often the way, but that was 8 hours. And she said no, she was going to fly, and she wasn't worried about the weather. She said, when it's my time to go, it's my time. And she got on that Comanche, and with Cowboy Copas and Hawkshaw Hawkins, the pilot was Randy Hughes, and that was it. They stopped in Rogers in Arkansas to refuel, and they landed in Dyersburg, and that was okay. And then the interesting thing is at the airport at Dyersburg, which is West Tennessee, they were advised, you might want to just stay at the hotel. We can give you free rooms and meals. And but Hughes said, no, I can do it now. He was not trained in instrument flying, and so that was really bad. And he took off, and of course, you know what happened. So that was the deal.
Miss Raleigh James, thank you very much for enlightening my evening tonight. I really appreciate you, and I'm glad to speak to you, but I'm not going to make a habit of it.
Well, I don't know why. I'd love to hear from you again. Thank you, Johnny.
I got a mental problem. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Well, you sound good to me. You're welcome to call anytime you want.
Well, I'm not in a panic over it because I'm a little bit too over the top when it comes to human condition called your brain, and I don't want to get out of the subject.
All right. Well, if the mood strikes you, I'll be here, and thank you for listening, and I'll play you some Walking After Midnight.
You're the best,
okay.
My dear.
Okay, bye. So, good deal, yeah. And that, I don't know why that, I'll have to look into that, because it was on Decca in 57. I don't know, it's usually not on her greatest hit stuff, and it was terrific. So, 888-876-5593. She was way ahead of her time, too. And, in fact, what later became Countrypolitan and all that in Nashville as the sound started to change. Had she lived, oh, man, she absolutely would have been a very big part of that, because she and her producer, who was Owen Bradley at Decca, certainly laid all the groundwork for what later became Countrypolitan. All right, so we're going to talk to John and McHenry and you two coming up on WGN Radio.
I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you. I walk for miles along the highway. Well, that's just my way of saying I love you. I'm always walking after midnight.
On Decca, sounding much more traditional country than she would just a few years later, but I think it's just still a terrific, terrific record. Patsy Cline. Another hour talking to you. We got Ruth, we got John, and hopefully your call's coming up on WGN Radio.
I'm searching for a new love. Can that new love
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and there they are, Tim Tam and the Turn-Ons. Yes, Suburban Detroit, 1966 on Palmer, and that was Cleveland Dennis's request, and why not? Tim Tam came from the horse at the Kentucky Derby, and Turn-On, of course, was, you know, a big phrase, obviously, at the time. So Tim Tam and the Turn-Ons, and yeah, that was recorded at United Sound Systems, and I think Opelia or something was the flip. And so the kids were young. I mean, really young. You know, you say high school like Allen Park High School, but they were freshmen. And so that was a deal on them. And it was released and sold a lot of copies for a local record. You know, they were on Scotty Regan's show and all that kind of stuff. Lucky Keener 13 played them and everything you would expect. So later, the group, they made enough money from, you know, the few regional hits they had. Much like the Carpenters, when the Carpenters bought apartment buildings in Downey, you know, and named it after their songs, like the We Only Just Begun Arms type thing. Well, Tim Tan Weissend and his brother Danny bought the Allen Park Apartments and rechristened it the Tim Tam Apartments, and that was the deal. And they were pretty good for a while, but sadly, most of the members of the group are dead, and the apartments have been demolished. But that was the deal. All right. So, but when Cleveland Dennis requested, wait a minute, the first thing I had thought of actually was the Enchanters, Wait a Minute Baby, which we'll get to, but the Coasters had Wait a Minute, and the Lost Generation had Wait a Minute. Totally different records, but we'll play them all. All right. So John and McHenry got hurt at the hospital. Well, at least you're somewhere where they can take care of you. Now, what exactly happened, John?
Well, I went to the doctor's office for an annual physical on Monday, and they did the usual blood draw, and, you know, they poke you with the needle, take a couple of small vials of samples for, you know, for the review for the physical, and they put that, like, a one-inch type of rubber band tourniquet above where they poke the needle, you know. And then I noticed the next day I got this 2.5-inch by 4-inch area black and blue mark on the bicep side of the arm, mm-hmm. not where you poke the needle, right. But where they put the tourniquet.
Right.
And I'm concerned because I haven't gotten a hold of the doctor yet. And that is, you know, can that be a problem down the road, or can they kill nerves or damage something with that? Because I've never had that.
How long was the tourniquet on?
Enough to get too small.
All right, not a long time. I think a few minutes. Yeah, I think this is very transient. You can get black and blue marks occasionally from that. It's not common, but I've seen it happen. And I wouldn't worry about it, but I absolutely would watch it. The fact that it's not near where they put the needle, where I'm not really afraid that you've got any type of infection going on there. You probably just have a bruise. It was probably just a little bit too tight. But I have a feeling you'll be fine, but you're right to watch it. But I certainly wouldn't worry about it. If it spreads, if it gets bigger, if you see any rashes, yes, you absolutely want to follow that up. But I don't think you will. I think you'll be fine.
But go to the doctor and tell them about it?
Well, I wouldn't yet. You know, there again, I mean, you know your arm and you're looking at it. But if you're just telling me you've got a black and blue mark, I would say I'd watch it, but I wouldn't run to the doctor over it.
Because it's to me, it's a 2-inch by a 4-inch area, somebody punched you.
Yeah, right. And I think it's just from the constriction of the tourniquet. But if you're concerned, if this is going to be something that you're really worried about that'll keep you up, absolutely go to the doctor, you know, or a walk-in emergency clinic or whatever. But I don't think you have much to worry about here, but I would watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to you since you came on WG, and this is my first time calling, and I really love your show.
Thank you.
But I wanted to figure, I hear all people calling with different things, and I figure, well, if nothing else, I wanted to make it to a doctor's attention if something did come out.
And you know, absolutely. Like I say, for peace of mind alone, that's worth it. My concern is that you don't want somebody to just dismiss it. You actually want them to take a look at it and see whether there's anything to be concerned about. But I'm pretty sure in your case there's not. But this has obviously gotten you concerned enough that you're asking about it. So, yeah, Go ahead and let me know what
they say. Yeah, because I never had that happen, ever. I've had the black and blue mark in the needle area, a little more.
Right. I've had both, but, you know, the deal is, though, that doesn't matter if I've had it or somebody else has had it. You've got it, and you're concerned. So it never hurts to get an opinion from somebody you trust.
Well, I hope to trust the doctor. It wasn't the doctor that did it. It was one of his aides.
Right. It was a phlebotomist, of course. That's normal. But is this a doctor you usually see?
I've been going to him for 25 years.
Well, then sure. Then you've got a relationship with him and just say, hey, this might be nuts, but I'm concerned. I want you to take a look at it.
Yeah, there you go. I wanted to say it the right way because my sister's like, oh, don't start blaming him for something.
No, you're not. You're not blaming anybody for anything. You're just saying, hey, this happened. I've got a black and blue mark. I'd like you to take a look at it and put my mind at ease to tell me that I'm fine. You know, and if you've been seeing
him, I love the way you said it.
Yeah, if you've been seeing him for 25 years, I can't imagine that he will refuse that and just have him take a look at it. And he'll explain to you how it happens and why. And if he does see anything that's a problem, he'll know what to do a lot more than some damn talk show host would. So let me know how it goes.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Raleigh, appreciate it.
And have a great day.
You too. Bye. All right. So, yeah, it's the kind of thing where it's easy for me to say don't worry about it. But, you know, if you're looking at it, never happened to you before, and you're, you know, you can go crazy with that. But, oh, man, when John had a stroke, they left him on a very tight blood pressure monitor that caused just a huge bruise in his upper arm that was there for about a month. So, it's not unusual. But let's find out what Donna in Oak Lawn has to say for herself. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
You're talking about black and blue marks after he had his blood drawn. You might want to go back to the doctor to see if they did a vitamin D when they did the blood draw to see if his vitamin D levels are low. A lot of times if you have low vitamin D levels, you're going to be bruising a lot more easily.
Okay, that's a good idea.
And if when they did the blood draw, they did not order a vitamin D or they didn't see what his coag levels were, they might want to do it to see what's going on to cause him to bruise and black and blue that magnificently for something as small or as slight as a tourniquet.
Yeah, and what's interesting with vitamin D, it's actually not the D itself, it's vitamin K that should be taken in conjunction with the D as far as that goes. And very often, it's low levels of K that do that. But there are a number of different things. If you're really low on B12, you can have a problem. So, but I would look at K, D, C, and zinc to start with.
Yep. And the only one who's going to know what lab tests were ordered is the doctor.
Right, and I do think that vitamin D is so important, and vitamin K, because it works in synergistic ways with D, should be on any routine screen, but very often they're not.
And the fun part about it is especially with, you mentioned John bruising because he had a blood pressure cuff on, and taking that long to get rid of the black and blue marks when he was in hospital. That only happens when you got your levels all messed up.
Well, no, what happened to him was actually almost malpractice. No, this would have happened. Completely constricted. I won't bother you on that, but trust me, this was an error. And it happens, but he's fine. And so that's the good news.
It happens. Yep.
All right.
But I figured I would mention it because he might still be listening.
Well, sure. And, you know, there's a number of things. Like I say, vitamin C is notorious as well. So there's so many different possibilities. But if, especially if he's getting bruises from relatively minor injuries, though I suspect he's not because he wouldn't have been as alarmed about this as far as that goes.
But it sounds significant.
Yeah, well, he will go, and hopefully his doctor will have something to say.
He will be overlaid, yes.
Yeah, absolutely, and hopefully they'll take a look at that. So, you know, at C, at K, and of course D and zinc and all that. Why not? It's good to know what those levels are anyway.
It Exactly.
Yeah.
You are a very wise woman. You have a good evening.
You too. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. All right. So, no, I've just been sick a lot. 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh. And Leah in Marcus Hook wants to weigh in. How you feeling, Leah?
Good. How are you, Raleigh?
All right. How are the gums? Are the swelling going down?
Yeah, a little bit. I still have some sore spots in some areas. But...
All right. Well, it'll take a little time, but that's good.
Frozen yogurt and blueberries and stuff like that. Yeah. I just wanted to say I think you should get tested for anemia, too, because I have anemia and I bruise very easily.
Yeah, that's good advice as well. I assume on his CBC that that's going to be covered. But okay. very often the vitamins aren't. But usually the anemia, he's going to be, I'd be very surprised if he isn't tested for
that. And one time I went to get my blood work done, and I have very deep veins, and she was trying to get it. Instead of calling someone else, which is what they usually do when they can't get it, she just continued to put the thing tighter and tighter. And she put it so tight that she gave me a fissure.
No. See, this is you got to stop people from doing things like that. You know, because I'm old, my veins just collapse when you look at them. I was just wonderful when I was younger, but now forget about it. They roll away and collapse. And people who really know what they're doing, usually veterinarians will get it on the first try. But not only that, people who really know what they're doing can do it. And I let people know, you got one shot at this. You don't get two. And if they're not comfortable doing that, then I go to someone else.
Well, I usually say that, but then they go, they go, oh, you're making me nervous.
Then maybe you shouldn't be drawing my blood, because if you're nervous over me saying that, then you shouldn't be the one. Who else can do this? Oh, no, I'm absolutely adamant about that. And I can't tell you how many times somebody's tried it, doesn't get it. Well, I'll just try again. On somebody else, you will.
Yeah.
You're done with me.
I usually give them three strikes.
Well, I don't. But here's the other thing. I've got a list of phlebotomists in my purse. I know who to call.
You do?
Yeah, absolutely. I know who I'm going to call. I'll pay for
it. Move away and go to the city.
Well,
they're in media, and then they move away and get good jobs in the city.
Well, you say the city. When I look at medical care, if it's within 100 miles, I consider it local.
Oh, okay.
So bottom line, though, is I absolutely keep people who know what they're doing. And so if the first time somebody's not good, it's like, you're done.
Yeah, but this woman gave me a fissure, and I didn't even know what a fissure was. Well, I never even had one in my life.
It's not pleasant.
No, it's not.
It's... it is not. And you know, actually, very often people... get it from things like anal fissures. I mean, you know, that's most common.
Oh, no, this was in my arm.
I know
like
it was.
A year for it to go away.
I know it was. But as I'm saying, most people who encounter it don't encounter. It's basically a fistula. And an AV fistula. Yeah, it can happen. No doubt about it. So
it took like a year. I had to keep putting antibiotic ointment on it. And crazy.
Well, you've learned your lesson. They don't get that many shots at it. But somebody's doing something where you're feeling the pain or you're feeling this is right. Speak up.
I am. Yeah, she's gone now. She's in Philly.
Well, so she's hurting somebody else. But yeah, you had an AV fistula, and that absolutely can be just a bear. So well, you won't do that again.
No, I won't, but I'm... You gotta watch. Even when you're getting the IV done, you gotta watch.
Oh, you gotta watch all the time.
All the time, you gotta watch what they're doing.
Absolutely, you bet.
Yeah. So even a bruise, you gotta make sure there's no fissure there. You know, when you're looking at the bruise.
Well, right. I have a feeling he's gonna be fine, but I'm glad he'll go to the doctor because it'll put his mind at ease.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, good deal. Well, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Raleigh.
All right, good deal. Yeah, all sorts of things can happen, but ultimately, it's your body. Speak up. And I know a lot of people, well, I don't really want to bother anybody. It's your body. All right, so we'll talk to Ruth in a moment. We're going to do the history of salt and pepper shakers. You know, it's not that old. About 100 years, really, as far as widespread use. All right, so all that and more. And by the way, I promised Fran that I would look up the EBT thing, and I did. But we didn't talk about that when she called. So I will review what states have what, but she's out of luck in Texas. All right, all that and more coming up on WGN Radio.
Offer you more.
What a nerve.
What a chase.
Better put her in her place.
Wait just a minute.
Bob-a-doo.
You know that I want to get in. If that's the way your love could be,
you might as well forget it.
Am I correct in any of what you said? That you would rather be with him instead? You said that you could travel with him far. Say he's got a brand new Cadillac car.
Well, what you mean?
Is that so?
Better let that woman go.
Well, yeah, you ain't a minute.
Bob-a-doo.
You know that I wanna get it. If that's the way your love will be,
you might as well forget it.
Till your fun is done.
And you're a rock and you're tough.
Honey, cut out all that stuff.
Wait, you ain't a minute.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's the Coasters. That's Wait a Minute, 1961 on ATCO. And Bobby Darin and Donnie Kirshner wrote that. So, yes, it went absolutely nowhere, but it still was called Wait a Minute. And The Lost Generation also had a song called Wait a Minute, and you'll hear it, too, right after the news. And then we'll talk salt and pepper and anything else that's on your mind on WGN Radio.
Stop it, baby, don't come too close, 'cause I'm already tempted to steal you, baby.
Steal you, baby. Wait.
Wait a minute, baby, don't touch my hand, 'cause I'm just a step away from stealing you.
From the other man.
With the other guys, what a man searches for. Oh, love, love, love like yours, baby, is like
a needle in a haystack, baby.
Stop it, baby, don't come too close, 'cause I'm just a step away from stealing you.
Lost Generation, Chicago's own. Right. First kind of formed around 1969 and hit the charts in 1970 with The Sly, The Slick, and The Wicked. And then Wait a Minute was the follow-up, and a fine song it was. So that's another Wait a Minute. And we'll have the final Wait a Minute, which actually is Wait a Minute, Baby, The Enchanters, coming up. All right, now Ruth and Gurney, the history of salt and pepper shakers. All right, Ruth, now why are we talking about this?
Well, first of all, direct from the University of Raleigh and the campus and the valedictorian, Johnny D, and loved hearing my coin the phrase, Avenue of Approach.
Yes.
All right. I have been fascinated with many types of collective items that I do myself, but I have not collected salt shakers, and I wonder why. I did get given one set of salt shakers from Great America for hosting Iron River Michigan Girl Scouts. And they are roller coasters. I, who never ride a roller coaster except at Riverview in the 1950s, so I won't go on anything larger than that. But salt and pepper shakers. I ordered, and it was kind of expensive for the container size, salt, iodized salt from Our Lady of Consolation or the Miraculous Medal.
All right.
And I thought, I had this idea about, I don't know computer-wise or phone smart-wise, all the telephone shakers. There were salt and pepper telephone shakers from one of the original type of desk phones, you know, the dial ones with the old numbers and the things that used to be 30 years ago, 40 years ago. I guess they could be considered antiques, but salt and pepper shakers, the selection is quite charming, nostalgic, can be very Americana, especially the one that's the sailor and the nurse from World War II. And there's such a incredible nostalgia involved in them. And then I was thinking, because this has been the year of years politically, a salt and pepper shaker, Biden, Trump.
Oh, well, you put
the salt in one of them, and then what's the deal that you do with the salt over your shoulder? Is it good luck? What is it? Uh-huh. Is it Mercury retrograde?
No, it has nothing. It has nothing to do with Mercury retrograde. But do you know the history of salt and pepper shakers? Do you know how old they are?
No, and I wondered if there were European ones where they came. As I said, I don't do computers or the phone information, and I can't get to the library to look them up and find more individually. But I've seen pictures of Americana, charming, nostalgic, and I passed the witching hour tonight.
All right.
And thank you, Fran, for the Connie Francis. All the tangled web they weave.
Well, indeed.
All right. To deceive karma.
Here's
karma,
the deal.
Karma, karma, karma.
Here's the deal. Let's talk about the throwing salt over your left
salt
shoulder.
Shelter. Yeah. Tell me what you know.
Well, it's
don't you know?
Yeah, it's to cancel bad luck. The left shoulder was where the devil was supposed to be sitting. So you're tossing salt in the devil's eyes. That's why you're doing that. You throw it over your left shoulder to put the salt in the devil's eyes, and hopefully it cancels the bad luck. But the interesting thing about salt and pepper shakers, even though salt goes back thousands and thousands of years, the history of salt and pepper shakers is only about 100 years old. Now, there were some in the mid-1800s for sure, but what caused salt and pepper shakers to work was because of Morton, you know, the salt people. Because before that, salt and pepper didn't matter, but salt were always in bowls. And you'd use a spoon, a little demitasse spoon or something like that, and you'd sprinkle it on whatever you wanted. Well, the reason for that is because salt clumps. And so what Morton did was they added magnesium to it so it wouldn't clump. So
okay, can I ask you one question?
Yeah.
Do you think that the Morton Salt Company, I used to pass them by on Metra every day on my way to House Beautiful, the Hearst magazine. So do you think they have a salt shaker with the Morton girl and the umbrella?
Well,
by the way, I got to go to Morton High School on a summer. You know, I chose an extra course so I could have all my courses by my junior year from St. Mary's. But I actually went the fourth year and graduated. Did you know that I was appointed a page in the Illinois House by James Silver of Cicero, a state senator?
All right.
And I would have been the first girl page in their history. But they didn't have a washroom, and I was glad that I did 4 years at St. Mary's Chicago. I had a better experience than I ever would have had with the politicians. But wouldn't two salt shakers fly off the shelves? If it was Biden and Trump?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if that isn't there. There is a salt and pepper shaker museum in, of all places, Gatlinburg, North Carolina. Somehow it belongs there. Gatlinburg, Tennessee, I'm sorry, on the North Carolina border.
Well, somebody's going to grab this idea on an avenue of approach.
Well, sure.
Now, I wanted to hand out fortune cookies.
Yeah.
at the Republican convention, vote Republican. But I still have the Democratic convention, and a story goes with that from 1968 up into the present. But you've given us some information, and continue on with anything more you know about the history of the salt shakers, and I'll be listening.
All right,
and,
good deal. Thanks, Ruth. I appreciate it.
And pick a Connie Francis song that's your favorite.
We'll do that tomorrow, I promise. Thanks.
Okay, all right. Bye-bye.
So there's a Made in Chicago museum, and I think they have the original Morton salt shakers, and they're actually kind of neat. And they added the magnesium in the early 1900s. But like I say, it goes back to the mid-1800s. Before that, nobody was doing it. And really, before the 1920s, the average person kept the salt in the bowl. You know, and you'll see some old dish sets, and they'll even have the little bowls for the salt and the pepper. You know, you might see that. And, of course, when salt shakers became viable, next thing you knew, they had to have pepper shakers, so that came later but accompanied them, so to speak. But as I say, there's a salt and pepper museum. I think they have 20,000 different things. What happened was, just like, you know, I've told you about Depression ware and how people collect that. Well, same thing in the Depression. That started the novelty salt shakers. People were collecting them. They were easy to transport, they were inexpensive, and they were souvenirs. And so you had a number of places and states and all that, and then you had cookware companies, and it is a collector's item. So I would not be surprised if there were, you know, Biden and Trump salt and pepper shakers. They're pretty much everything. And so the prototype, if you go to the museum in Gatlinburg, the prototype goes back to the 1500s. Now, of course, it didn't work because of the clumping, and you had to fix that. And that's what Morton was able to do, was fix that. And to this day, you know, a lot of people keep a couple of grains of rice in the bottom of the salt shaker to make it, you know, clump free and all that. But yeah, I would think if you're interested in salt and pepper shakers, next time you're in Gatlinburg, and it is the perfect place really all the way around for that, you can go to the Salt and Pepper Shaker Museum, and I'm sure it's online as well. And I would bet they've got pictures. See, while I'm talking, I'm looking it up. Yeah, they got pictures, all right. You can see all sorts of, cats. You know, of course there'd be cats. Why would I even doubt that? Then you have, I'm a left-handed shaker made specially for you, and quite original and practical too. A southpaw shaker to bring you good cheer with luck and happiness for many a year. Most salt shakers, I didn't realize, favored any hand, but should you want the left-handed, you can have that. And of course, you know, all the different, anything that can be done with ceramic, there's a salt and pepper shaker in it somewhere. But let's see if I can find political salt and pepper shakers. I'll do that, and then we'll get into the SNAP program and EBT in the 9 states where you can use it at restaurants and what restaurants and all that. Coming up. You can interrupt the show, you know. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
WGN.
radio. I'm Raleigh James, the Enchanters, and an interesting history of them, too. Detroit, don't you know, 1956 on Coral. Yeah, it was a flip side. Wait a minute, baby. Maybe we'll play There Goes a Pretty Girl, which was actually almost a hit for them, and talk about them tomorrow night. But I was just looking up. You can have rare Democrat and salt and pepper shakers for Burt Steinwedel for governor of 1960. To the salt of the earth, the Hoosier Democrat, and from a Democratic pepper upper... Oh, Pepper Upper, I guess. Okay, Burt Steinwedel. So that's available for your enjoyment. Then we also had Trump salt and pepper shakers. I don't see any of those available, though. But President Lyndon Johnson and Lady Bird at Etsy. You could buy your Lyndon Johnson pepper shakers as we speak. And salt, of course. I don't know whether Lyndon was salt or pepper. But in any event, Ruth's idea is nice, but apparently somewhat used. Then, of course, you have the Democratic and political and Republican political parties in donkeys and elephants in salt and shakers. But so yes, there. But I'm looking here at the Trump salt and pepper shaker right now. And all right, well, so it's out there. So 888-876-5593. We're going to close it out tonight with Josh on the South Side. What's up tonight, Josh?
Hi, how's it going tonight?
I can't complain.
That's good to hear. I have a couple of questions. So you were talking about salt and pepper shakers. I went to an estate sale not too long ago, and I found the Chicago flag has four or five stars, and one of them is for the World's Fair that they had in like 18 something, and then the other star is for the World's Fair that they had in 1934. And I found a creamer, a sugar bowl, and a salt and pepper shaker. They're all made of ceramic with gold, some sort of gold, like maybe leaf on the outside. You know, it's not real gold, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and I paid $50 for it, and I'm like, it's almost 100 years old, so I'll keep a hold of it and see what can go down with it.
That's a wonderful collectible.
Yes. I was really excited to find them. I don't use salt and pepper shakers, though. I use a salt bowl as well because I like really coarse salt, like sea salt.
Yeah.
So my next question was, I don't think you'll be able to get into it tonight, but there's this video going around of this guy, you know, a soda gun, like to put the soda in the cups.
Yes.
And it'll be connected to a conduit. So this guy, he's pulling the trick on people where he says it's a Bluetooth soda gun, and so there's no conduit, there's no pipe, and he just pours it, and yet the soda comes out, and people are all amazed and stuff. And it made me kind of think about the first time wireless microphones came onto the scene.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple of people talk about 1979, Kate Bush. I've seen Elvis Presley on the Mert Burrell show in 56. Mm-hmm. I've seen some other person. I saw them mention it at the Democratic and the Republican conventions in 1960 to talk to people on the floor of the conventions with but what was the deal? Do you remember the first time you saw a wireless microphone? Was it a big deal? Was it a seamless transition?
Well, it wasn't that great. It was the
And if you can't get into it today, you can get into it tomorrow.
I'll tell you fairly quickly. The first wireless mic was the Vagabond 88, and it was made by Shure. And it had a couple of batteries and supposedly could work for about 700 square feet. And this was 1953. But there have been a number of them over the years. Telefunken made a lot of them. And, you know, you can see some of those early ones, the Telefunkens. You can see them on sale still for like $12,000 as far as that goes. So that, but that Vagabond 88 was the first one. And, you know, then there were, of course, many since then. And Sennheiser.
And when did they come commonplace?
Well, you know, over the years, Sennheiser in 57 started. I think the Telefunken started in about 58, right in there. And as far as American patents, that would be the latter 50s as well. And it was used, like you say, widely in that 1960 Democratic and Republican convention. And Sony. 20. I had the CR4, and that would have been about 58. But that was more like nightclub acts and things like that. And then Marine Land of the Pacific in California, that tourist attraction thing, they wore wireless mics as early as 60, 61. And,
I read that as well.
Yeah, so, you know, the deal was it was an FM transmitter, and it would have to be small enough to, you know, be able to be disguised in a shirt pocket or whatever. And so...
when you say FM transmitter, does that mean that it was like they were like a radio type of thing? What does that mean?
Absolutely. They were absolutely broadcasting it, yes.
Okay.
So then there was that transistophone. Oh, God. And I'm trying to think. You know, movies, probably by the early 60s to mid-60s, movies were using them. But as far as musicians, I know Todd Rundgren did some stuff early on. So there's a number of that over the years. And so it
was did it surprise the American public?
The American public didn't think about it one way or another, trust me.
Okay.
You know.
Celebrities like Aretha Franklin, I think it was Aretha Franklin, chose not to use wireless microphones well into her older years. They said that the sound quality.
Absolutely. And that's always, from day one, that was the issue of what's the level of sound quality you're getting out of these things. And so, you know, the early ones, it was solid state. I mean, they were transistorized. Obviously, they were fitting in shirt pockets. They weren't tubes. And I think it was about 27 megahertz is what they were using at the time. And, the receiver, I think, actually, in the first ones, wasn't solid state. But the receiver, of course, is a different issue. That can be at a, you know, it can be larger and not be a problem. I'm sure all this stuff is online.
Yeah, but it's just not. It wasn't so clear, and you know, it's telling a lot of like, you know, saying the names that you were saying and stuff. But I'm like, I don't know what any of this means. Like, it didn't at all give me a precise answer. I got the I also got like you said the Marine show in California, and I also got Empires in baseball games were using some sort of a wireless microphone into the late 50s and 60s.
Right.
That's interesting.
It was something that it isn't like a real line of development. It was more of a rocky road. But you hit on it. Quality was the big issue, period. You had to get the quality up there. And you've ended the show. So I will talk to you soon, I hope. Okay, thanks.
All right, talk
appreciate
to you later.
It. Bye. All right, so on that note, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. Above all, I thank you for calling. It makes the show a pleasure to do. Let's do it tomorrow night, either at 10 o'clock or whenever Trump winds down a speech. We'll be here on WGN Radio.